1 year ago, he learned the truth.
You're a wizard, Harry.
And his first year at Hogwarts School became legend. And so, for Harry Potter and his friends, another year begins.
Bloody birds of menace.
Their education in the magical arts continues.
Pixies.
Laugh if you will, Mr. Finnegan. See what you make of them. No!
Old rivalries grow stronger.
The Slytherin's got a new seeker.
Malfoy.
You'll never catch me, Potter!
And something in the school's dark past will be awakened.
The Chamber of Secrets has indeed been opened.
Unless the culprit is caught, it is likely the school will be closed.
Harry Potter must go home.
Oh dear, we are in trouble.
Here's the plan. You disguise yourselves as Crabbe and Goyle.
Are we going to drink that?
Yes.
Harry?
Ron. Excellent.
This year, Warner Brothers Pictures presents...
How dare you steal that car!
The next chapter of Harry Potter. Where the past will return and the struggle for the future of Hogwarts will begin. Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets.
Let us hope. Mr. Potter will always be around to save the day.
Don't worry. I will be.
Popcorn, get your popcorn.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Daily Profcast.
I'm Erin.
I'm McKenna.
And today we're going to be talking about the Chamber of Secrets film.
Yep. So if you haven't watched the Chamber of Secrets movie in a long time, now is an excellent time to pause this podcast. Go grab yourself a butterbeer and some popcorn, sit down and turn the movie on, and then come back here for some hot goss about the movie.
McKenna, did you watch the extended version?
I did watch the extended version.
I did not, so I'm excited to hear your thoughts on the... I've seen it before, though, so I'm excited to hear your thoughts on the deleted scenes. That
I just watched it last night, so hopefully my mind can wrap its head around what it watched.
Yeah, that's real.
You might hear some distracting noises in the background today, to which I sincerely apologize, but my four foster kittens are in the studio with me today.
Why would we be complaining about extra kittens?
But to start off, you know I have some fun facts about the movie.
McKenna, give us all your movie facts. I look forward to this every time we watch one of the new movies, or watch a movie.
Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, the film, was released in theaters in the UK and the US on November 15, 2002. How old were you?
2002, I was 7.
So I remember seeing this movie in theaters, and this might have been the first Harry Potter I ever saw in theaters.
Oh, I don't remember if I saw the first one in the theaters. I did see this one in theaters.
I've seen them all subsequently in the theaters in other showings now. But I think this was the first one I ever remember, because I remember the spiders particularly really freaking me out.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
And I remember it being around Halloween time, because these movies always came out like in the fall, typically.
Fall or Christmas time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I remember it being like cooler weather and definitely like a post-Halloween decorations might have still been up sort of vibe. And I remember the spiders and how scared the spiders made me.
I just remember, like, I remember being in awe of how huge Aragog looked, like little Dan, little Rupert. Yeah, I do remember that. You're right.
I think I had nightmares about the spiders for a long time after. So this movie grossed $879 million worldwide, and at the time became the second highest grossing film of 2002. So it did really well. And the movie that it was behind was The Lord of the Ring, The Two Towers. So that's some pretty tough competition.
Super tough competition. Speaking of not seeing movies and getting scared of movies, I think I saw the first Lord of the Rings in theaters. This is kind of off topic, But my parents wouldn't let me go see the second one in theaters because my dad knew that Gollum was going to be scary. I was very scared of Gollum when I ended up seeing it at home on VHS or DVD or whatever.
It'd be really fun to do Lord of the Rings on our Patreon one day.
Oh, we should. At least the films, if not
the books. At least the films. Some Legolas action?
Oh, anyone? God. My first childhood love.
I know. Legolas. I had a... Legolas was the first poster I ever had in my room.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It was like a giant picture of Orlando Bloom with the long, long blonde hair. And he was like, had an arrow drawn.
God, he's beautiful. I love that TikTok trend where people are comparing their significant others to their like childhood, like actor movie crushes. And mine were Orlando Bloom as Legolas and Orlando Bloom as Will Turner. And I ended up with Austin. I was destined to be with a man with long blonde hair and a square jaw.
It's funny you say that because Daniel Radcliffe was for sure my childhood crush.
I remember very vividly.
It was the geeky glasses and the hair that was just always messy. My Look husband has the same vibe, yeah.
Look at your life. Look at your choices.
This movie was nominated for a BAFTA in Best Production Design, Sound, and Visual Effects. But didn't win any of those categories because Lord of the Rings.
Because Lord of the Rings. All that to say, the effects in this one are pretty stunning.
Yeah, there's a overall. Big jump overall in film quality going from Sorcerer's Stone to Chamber.
And I'm picturing Moaning Myrtle, the Basilisk. The for 2002, the animation of the Basilisk was pretty impressive.
Pretty dang good.
The scene where Harry's staring in the mirror after drinking the polyjuice potion and slowly his skin bubbles and then he turns into Goyle. That transition's really good. Yeah
for sure. It was really good effect. So this movie has an 83% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is pretty good because typically franchise films don't score well on Rotten Tomatoes or always with critics. When you look at movies like James Bond or other fantasy or action series movies, they don't always do well critically, but this movie did do very well critically. It was praised overall by critics for being much closer to the book than its predecessor.
Really?
Yes, but also criticized for being unnecessarily long.
Oh.
The extended version of this movie runs 174 minutes.
That is pretty long. I don't know, there's never, maybe this is just me and I'm biased because we love the franchise so much, but I was going to say, I guess in Chamber of Secrets, there's never really a moment where I'm like, okay, let's like get to the next thing. But, interesting.
When I was watching this, I really realized how long it was.
Like I said, there's not a moment in Chamber of Secrets where I like really get bored. So I guess I just don't realize how long it is.
I don't know if it is that action pack. There's a lot of lead up to things.
Yeah.
Prisoner of Azkaban is the same way.
Yeah. Whereas Goblet of Fire with the tournament.
Yeah, there's just like always something going on, right?
And then after that, it's just like subsequently very action packed all the way through. That's true. That's a good observation.
So it's a tradition that we recast the characters.
Yes. What McKenna and I like to do is if we were recasting whichever Harry Potter movie we're on in 2020, as if the previous series had never happened, who would we cast? So the characters we're going to be recasting today, if you didn't watch or listen to our Sorcerer's Stone movie episode, we did a lot of the initial characters that we see throughout the series. And we did McGonagall and Snape and Dumbledore all in the Sorcerer's Stone movie episode or Philosopher's Stone. In this one, there weren't too many new characters to cast. So we are recasting Gilderoy Lockhart, Professor Pomona Sprout, Molly and Arthur Weasley, Lucius Malfoy, and the memory of Tom Riddle.
Yeah.
So with that, should we start in order of who we see? So the first new people we see on this list are Molly and Arthur Weasley.
Right. We meet them after Harry has been jailbroken from the Dursleys' house and shows up to the Burrow.
Wait, McKenna. We didn't cast Dobby.
Oh, God.
Just kidding. Yes, they show up to the bed's empty. No note. Oh, gone.
Who do you have for Molly?
I had a weird moment where I had the same actress in mind for somebody who could both play Molly Weasley. and somebody who could also play a really, really good Umbridge. But very I wanted opposite, to give her more
opposite on totally. The spectrum.
As soon as I say this actress, you're going to go, oh yeah, she could do both. Okay. I wanted to give her more screen time. I decided to put her for Molly instead of Umbridge, although she would make a fantastic Umbridge. The person I picked is Olivia Colman.
Yeah, I think she could do it. I think you're right. I think Olivia Colman has amazing range.
Yeah.
She could do both very well. Yeah, I would agree
with that. If you've seen The Favorite, if you've seen her couple seasons in The Crown. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think she would be a really
She was awesome in that Molly. Show with David Tennant.
Yes.
Broadchurch.
Yep.
Yeah, I really like her. That's a great casting.
Thank you.
I have Alex Kingston. She was in ER, Doctor Who, Arrow.
Yeah. I see that. Another fun thing we like to do when we do these recasts is do an Instagram poll in our stories. So after you listen to this episode, head over to our Instagram stories. We'll do it on the Thursday we release the episode. And you can pick which one of our choices you like better, and we'll reveal the winners of those polls. We like to do that.
Mm-hmm. It's fun. It's a fun competition.
It is a fun competition. Last time McKenna won, she got 4 out of our 7 actors were in her favor. However, my pick for Professor Snape was the favorite. So who really won here?
It was pretty close though. Don't let her fool you.
It was close. It was close. And your pick was very good.
Thank you. I agree.
Yes.
So then after we meet Molly Weasley, of course, there is Arthur Weasley.
Yes. So I went first last time. McKenna, who did you recast as Arthur Weasley?
I did not cast a British actor in this.
We really try and stick to the author's original desire of only casting actors that are from the UK and Ireland.
But
sometimes
don't care about the author anymore. So we're
like mad at her. So
I have Henry Zerny.
Canadian. I'll accept it.
Yes, he's Canadian. British adjacent.
Yeah. Okay. I see it.
He's
a little old now.
Okay, but he looks very young. I don't think he looks his age.
No, he doesn't. Yeah. I like the choices of Alex Kingston and him together.
He is from Ready or Not, The Boys of St. Vincent, Mission Impossible, The Pink Panther, and also Schitt's Creek.
Schitt's Creek?
He was in Schitt's Creek. I think it's a more minor role, but he was in Schitt's Creek.
I do.
So I think he could do the comedy of Arthur very well. I really like his face structure. I know that that's weird, but I think that he...
It's not weird.
Has an interesting face to look at that I think could be very... He looks like a dad to me. Like a fun dad.
Totally.
I think he could be a ginger. Yes. He would be a handsome ginger.
Yes, I agree. Nice. Okay, so my pick. So since my pick for Professor Snape, a recast of Professor Snape, was Benedict Cumberbatch, you cannot have a movie that has Benedict Cumberbatch in it that does not also have Martin Freeman in it. So my pick for Arthur Weasley was Martin Freeman. I don't know if Arthur Weasley is described as being tall. I don't remember if he is. Martin Freeman is not tall, but he has such a Weasley energy. He's just like this sort of funny, piddling. If you've seen Sherlock or The Hobbit, you'll understand what I'm talking about. I just love him as an actor. I think he would make a really great Arthur. I don't know. Thinking about him and Olivia Colman together is like a weird, fun energy that I really vibe.
I like Olivia Colman a lot for Molly because she's quirky and weird, especially if you've seen interviews with her.
Yes, exactly.
She does quirky very well. The Favorite is a good movie for that. So I think, I do like that. I like them together. It's a nice pairing.
Yeah. So those are my picks. The next person on this list that we meet, are we going with the order of events of the extended version or the order of the events of the non-extended version?
Non-extended version for the people.
Non-extended version. In that case, the next person on this list that we meet is Gilderoy Lockhart. Mm-hmm. Oh boy. I don't know who you picked as your casting choice for this, but just to remind the listeners, McKenna and I mostly try and go for book age accuracy because in the original films, a lot of the adult actors were, or characters were aged up
because I think they had cast Alan Rickman pretty early on, and then when they cast him a little bit older than Snape's book age, they had to age up everybody else.
Which, by the way, Alan Rickman looks much older than the James and Lily that they picked.
Totally, but I would not sacrifice Alan Rickman being in the movie to
have, like, oh, you know me, I wouldn't sacrifice Alan Rickman anywhere.
For anything.
For anything.
Exactly.
I'd die on that hill. We do try and stick close to the ages. And if they're not the right age, they have to feasibly play that age well.
Yes. So just to remind everybody, Gilderoy Lockhart was 5 years under the Marauders at Hogwarts. So he, when we meet him in Chamber of Secrets, he's about 28 years old.
Who did you pick?
I was torn between two. I'm going to go with like my, we do this sometimes. I'm going to go with like my primary pick and then my secondary pick. So my primary pick, you're going to love this, is Richard Madden, who played Robb Stark. But
love Richard Madden.
He's very attractive and he can play suave. I don't know how good of, how, I've never seen him in a role where he's had to be bumbling and buffoonish, like that aspect of Lockhart, but he's got the attractive, gets what he wants because he's good looking thing going for him. And he's just, I don't know. I could see him playing the suave aspect of Lockhart. When I was thinking about, he's 34 in real life, so he could play 28. I think they maybe, I don't know. When I was thinking of other actors that I'm like, okay, who could play like a funny buffoonish Lockhart, that side of him that we see. I was thinking of that show, The Great. And I absolutely love Nicholas Holt. And I think he might be able to play a really funny Lockhart too.
After
he's very tall, very good looking. He was hilarious as the Emperor in The Great.
I'd be happy with either of those. I do have Richard Madden cast elsewhere.
Okay.
I think in a more serious role.
Oh,
is that no? Not a. That was not a pun.
A more serious role.
No, that was not a pun.
No, I know who your serious black pick is.
And it's fab.
Or maybe I don't anymore. Those are my Lockhart picks. I'm going to go with Richard Madden as the primary, Nicholas Holt as the secondary.
The understudy, McKenna, one might say.
The understudy for Lockhart. McKenna, who do you have?
I have an American. Sorry, English people.
You are straying so much.
I'm straying. But to me, when I think of Lockhart, this is the person in my head.
Okay.
Who just encompasses. I think he could play the doofus part of Lockhart. He's also so handsome, stupid good looking, which I think Lockhart has to be just so dumb to look at because he's so attractive.
Yes.
So I have Armie Hammer.
Oh man. But could he be goofy? Is he goofy?
Yeah, he's been goofy in different roles. If you've ever seen Call Me By Your Name, he has a goofy side to him in that movie. Okay. I think he could be a blonde.
Well, he's got like, he's like strawberry blonde.
Which
like,
is Lockhart a little bit
lightery. Yeah.
He has that just really chiseled face, good bone structure. Just
yeah, Armie Hammer's a beautiful man.
Just a really nice person to look at.
Yeah. I worry that I would not like him. You're not supposed to like Lockhart. I think if Armie Hammer
you
was
are, you're supposed to like him, but also hate him. You're supposed to
that's
like
exactly. What he looks I like would I would only like him if it was Armie Hammer.
I think he could do what Kenneth Branagh does. I really do.
Okay, except that freaking love Kenneth Branagh in that role. By the way,
I know genius,
so good.
Yeah. The next person that we meet is the one Lucius Malfoy.
Oh man,
Lucius listen, with the luscious hair.
Listen, we don't like Lucius because he's a Nazi, but Jason Isaacs in that role, beautiful.
Genius.
A beautiful human. The long hair. Anybody who knows me in real life will know that I'm very partial to men with long blonde hair.
It's true.
McKenna, who did you pick for Lucius Malfoy? Keep in mind, Lucius Malfoy would be in his 40s.
So the actor I picked is 43.
Okay.
But a young 43, and he's probably 6 foot.
Okay.
Give Lucius a nice height.
Yeah.
I picked Bertie Carvell from Dr. Foster.
Oh.
He's also a stage actor. He was in Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, Dr. Foster, The Pale Horse, Les Miserables.
Yeah, I see it. He's got like a really big sort of strong jaw too that makes him, I don't know, it's what I think of as a Malfoy feature.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see that. I see it.
He's handsome, okay, has a good jawline.
Yeah.
The right size forehead to pull off that long blonde hair.
True. Also, I don't know, looking at his face, I could see him like saying snarky comments to children. Like,
well, I think he
does. Your parents were meddling fools too. They'll meet the same, you'll meet the same sticky end.
He does play harsh roles. He was in Les Miserables. I don't think he played a particularly great character. And he was Rupert Murdoch in Ink, and he was also Miss Trunchbull in Matilda the Musical. In Dr. Foster, he plays the cheating husband of Dr. Foster, and he's pretty freaking evil and manipulative and conniving. Ugh. Anyway, who do you have?
My pick was Tobias Menzies. If you've seen Outlander, he's fantastic as Black Jack Randall, and then Claire's first husband, Frank Randall. I just think he could rock the long, he's really good at scary menacing if you've seen Outlander. I think he could rock the long hair.
The next character we're going to meet that we are casting is...
Anybody on here that watches Call the Midwife? If you need a new Netflix show, if you're just fresh out of a season of something and you need a new Netflix show, I highly recommend Call the Midwife. If you like to cry, if you like to be emotionally ripped in the heart, you'll love Call the Midwife. It's a beautiful, wonderful show. Delightful feminist values. It's great. And my pick is an actress from Call the Midwife. Her name is Linda Bassett. She plays Nurse Phyllis Crane in Call the Midwife. And in the book, Professor Sprout is just described as being a stout, pleasant looking woman. And Linda Bassett gives me all those vibes.
She looks like she could have played the teapot in Beauty and the Beast. And yes, to me, that's Professor Sprout vibes.
Yes, yes, exactly. Also, the original actress who played Professor Sprout was actually also in Call the Midwife, which is funny. So my inspiration was drawn from similar source material.
So I have a younger actress, but I think she could be aged up appropriately. She is a Sri Lankan actress who's based in the UK. She's born in Sri Lanka.
Oh.
But she grew up in the UK. Her name is... Sita Jayasundara. She's also from Dr. Foster, and she plays one of the other doctors in Dr. Foster's practice. She's just a very good friend, always a shoulder to cry on, very smart and very capable. And I think that all of those qualities that she brings to Dr. Foster, I think she could bring to Pomona Sprout.
Love that. And finally, our last person we need to cast is a young 16-year-old Tom Riddle. Now, McKenna and I said at the beginning of our Sorcerer's Stone film episode, we are not casting any of the students because presumably if we did this, as if we're going to like actually direct the films in our fantasy world where we're directing the new films, presumably we would do the same thing where we cast like 10, 11-year-old actors and then they continue to grow with the series until they're finally however old at the end of the series. We don't know any 10, 11-year-old actors, but it's a little bit more feasible to cast like a teenager, early 20s British actor. So we decided to go ahead and cast our young Tom Riddle when we see him at age 16. So McKenna, who did you pick?
Tom Taylor. He's in The Last Kingdom and he's in Dr. Foster and he's a young...
Oh, I love
actor.
The Last Kingdom. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's great. I loved him in The Last Kingdom.
We get spooky, handsome boy vibes from him, right?
Yeah, he's very fair, though. You'd have to darken him up a little bit as far as hair goes. I was going back and forth on a casting choice for this for a little bit. And then I saw the recent Enola Holmes film on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a young actor in it who played her buddy. Actually, they have some a little bit of romantic tension, which is cute. The second I saw him, I was thinking, actually, would make a really good young Tom Riddle. I don't know how vindictive he could play. I don't know how like scary vindictive he could be, but he's got the look for a handsome Tom Riddle, young Tom Riddle. And that is Lewis Partridge. And he is actually 17 years old.
This kid looks like he could be a Vogue model.
Yeah, exactly. Those are our casting choices for this film.
I think it would be nice just to talk about some of our favorite book moments and areas where we think they could have done a wee bit better.
With the film?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. Do you want to start us off?
The part of Harry with the Dursleys and Dobby was different than the book because in the book, of course, the owl goes on Mrs. Mason, and it's just a slightly different order of events. I actually don't think that that matters so much in the grand scheme of things, mm-hmm. to the point where I'm like, why couldn't they have just left it as it was?
Got it.
But Harry has this line where Dobby's telling him, you can't go back to Hogwarts. It's dangerous. You have to stay home. And Harry says, I can't. Hogwarts is my home.
I have that written down too.
It literally kills me every time.
It's so good. Yeah, that's such a great line. I don't think that's in the book.
No, I don't believe so.
I have a lot of stuff written about Dobby and just Dan's reactions.
Oh my God, the facial expressions. And
yeah, the jump in acting ability of the trio from the first movie to this movie is pretty significant and even greater going into the next film.
It's wild.
I think they clearly got some really great acting training. I'm sure they're also their natural ability comes into play. I don't want to discount that. All the Dobby stuff is great. I think the flying car scenes, the way they like made that look in the films is really brilliant. It really brought that to life.
Once we get to Harry at the Burrow with the Weasleys, we lose the whole bit of him like really being there longer than what looks like in the movie, just a couple days.
Yeah.
But he's obviously finishing out the summer with them.
Yeah.
And the whole gardening with the gnomes and all of that stuff. I understand for brevity, this movie's already so long. I can't even imagine them packing anymore. Yeah. But once they get to Diagon Alley, we do get in the extended version.
This is one of my favorite. This extended scene is probably my favorite in this film.
We get a longer look at Draco and Malfoy at Borgin and Burke's.
Yeah. You don't even see them in the normal cut of the movie. Harry gets into Borgin and Burke's, and one of the dumb things, he starts touching stuff in this creepy shop. He just goes around and starts touching stuff, gets his hand caught in that creepy hand, and then he just sneaks out. We don't get Draco or Lucius at all until Flourish and Blotts in the normal cut of the film, but in the extended version, we get to see their interaction with Mr. Borgin, keep his things under the radar from the ministry. And Draco's complaining about Harry. We get to see that in the extended version. I do wish they had kept that in the normal cut of the film. But again, you're right, it is long.
But it's a really good scene. One of my favorite parts of that scene is Lucius turns his focus to Draco to tell Draco to stop touching things in the store. And we see Mr. Borgin, he's counted out the galleons for all of the stuff he's bought from Malfoy. We see him steal one and put it in his pocket. I just loved the detail. I just really enjoyed that scene. And I'm glad I own the extended version to have watched it.
Yeah.
And as Harry's trying to run out and leave the store, he runs into Mr. Borgin and has not a confrontation, but just a brief moment speaking with him before Hagrid shows up to save the day.
Do you have anything else on Diagon Alley?
I don't think so.
All the car scenes with the way they ended up shooting every scene with the flying car or the car getting them out of the spider's den is just brilliant. The Ford Anglia is so good. It like really makes the car a character, which I loved.
The car scenes are fabulous.
The rewatching the movie, the whole day where they go to King's Cross and they get locked out of the barrier and then they have to take the car to school. The person who had the worst day during all that was by far Hedwig.
Oh, I know. Hedwig had the worst day.
Hedwig gets thrown around when they run into the barrier. She's like in the car and they go into the willow and then like, oh my God, poor Hedwig.
Yeah, it's rough for that bird.
Yeah.
And she's to be locked up at the dirt.
So poor Hedwig.
It's really not good. Poor Hedwig. Yeah. The Whomping Willow gave me major anxiety.
Really?
Also, the location of the Whomping Willow definitely changes.
A lot of things change as far as the layout of the castle goes in the next movie.
Because I did watch Prisoner of Azkaban
right after, that's right, you texted me that.
And I was like, some things were not where they were last year.
Yeah, I don't change a lot of stuff.
The Whomping Willow actually, there's a lot of scenes of this movie that give me massive anxiety. So to start, the Whomping Willow.
Yep.
Then moving into the spiders.
Yep.
Harry's Quidditch game. Childhood
trauma coming up.
Yeah, me and Ron, I tell you. The Quidditch game with the enchanted bludger.
Yes, I have a fun fact about that when you're done.
Oh, hit me.
Right now?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's this rumor going around on the internet that somebody in the studio, so John Williams scored the first three Harry Potter films.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the iconic music we hear from the film series is something that John Williams wrote. there's this rumor going around on the internet that during that Quidditch scene where Harry's arm gets hit by the bludger, somebody at the studio messed up, and that there's music from Star Wars Attack of the Clones in it to just fill some time during that scene. That has not been confirmed by the studio, but upon watching it, mind you, John Williams has a lot of like themes that he uses in a lot of his music that makes it sound like, if you listen to E.T. and then the Superman. But
Star Wars and Harry Potter have a lot of very similar musical elements.
Yeah, yeah. And that's something that's been discussed. But there's a couple just like motifs in the music that you're like, that sounds like the Starfighter fight. But it has not been confirmed. There's nothing that officially confirms it. But if you go back and listen to it, we'll pick up a couple very Star Wars-y sounding melodies.
What else here is that they definitely didn't put in, and again, I get for brevity reasons why they had to not include these things, but I would have loved to see the Death Day party.
Yes,
me too. The convergence of the ghosts, and I think maybe part of the decision not to leave that in, obviously timing is one of the factors, but they were doing so much CGI and special effects work for this film. And those things were quite expensive still, but especially at the time to produce. So I think they might have been
a Death Day party with a bunch of translucent ghosts.
Yeah.
Put that budget toward Myrtle.
Yeah, exactly. Had to get those pigtails just right.
I want to point something out about Lockhart. So I don't remember if this was an extended scene where Lockhart announces that he's going to be the new Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher.
I think it is an extended scene.
Okay, that was in my brain. I don't remember if I like am remembering that wrong, but in the regular cut of the movie, that's not something he announces. I don't think. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. I might be wrong.
No, I don't think it is, because I think they get to school and they're like, who's this?
He just shows up. Ah, suddenly I am the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher. I had a book signing and now I'm your teacher. He's brilliant. He's brilliant in that role. Scene that makes me the most emotional in this whole movie is right after Draco calls Hermione Mudblood and they go to Hagrid's house, and just like how outraged he is that Draco said that to her, and just like consoling her. He goes, you like, Hermione, don't you think on it. There is not a spell that our Hermione can't do. I cry. It makes me so much. It's so sweet.
My least favorite scene of the movie is Ron puking up slugs.
Okay, but can we talk about the acting? It's so good.
I know, but it's the slugs for me.
It's pretty gross, but his like little baby Rupert Grint acting through that is pretty impressive.
Yeah, they definitely grew an acting prowess between the
considering
first and
that
the
Daniel Radcliffe
film.
Breaks character literally every scene of Sorcerer's Stone.
Yeah, he couldn't stop laughing. I just really thought it was gross. That's really what I wanted to say there. It was icky. I actually can't watch it. I have to turn my face away every time.
Seriously?
Yeah. There is something so icky about the thought of that texture.
Live slug getting projectile vomited out of your body.
Oh, God. Yeah. It's icky. Mm. Also, watching Lockhart take away Harry's arm, remove the bones.
When Harry, he bends it back.
It doesn't make you feel good, does it?
No, that grosses me out more than the slugs is the arm bend.
It's wrong.
Dueling club.
Yes.
What do you think about the dueling club scene? Very different in the movie than it is in the books.
Okay, so scenes, you just said a scene that made you very emotional. So this is bleeding into dueling club. A scene that makes me very emotional, it's only in the extended cut of the films, is Harry meets Justin Finch Fletchley in the movies, which we don't see that except for in the extended.
Yeah, he introduces himself in the greenhouse during Herbology.
Justin says, oh, even in the muggle world, we know who you are in an admiring sort of way. Then they go to dueling club and Justin is led to believe that Harry is the heir of Slytherin.
Yeah.
And scenes that make me so emotional in the extended.
I know.
Harry's in study hall. He leaves because all the other kids are whispering about him and he lingers outside.
The Hufflepuffs are all gossiping about him. That's a good scene with Ernie McMillan.
Yeah.
It's a really good extended scene.
It's a really good scene, but it is so sad.
And then is that when he goes up after and he's like talking to Hedwig? He's like, who am I, Hedwig?
Oh my God. I was not okay.
Yeah, when he's talking to Hedwig, it's really sweet how he interacts with Hedwig.
But Dueling Club,
Dueling Club in the books is very different. We discussed that in our episode where we talked about that chapter. But I want to say one thing. There are so many times in these films where, as somebody who has like studied all of the spells and exactly what they do, there are so many times in these movies where like a spell gets cast and the thing, whatever like occurs because of that spell is not the thing that is supposed to occur according to the book. So for instance, in the Dueling Club scene, you know, Harry and Malfoy are facing off. Harry casts Rictor Sempra, which is a tickling charm. Rictor Sempra is the tickling charm. Like, Malfoy should be bent over laughing, but he spins in the air and it throws him back and he lands on his butt, you know? Like, that's not... And anybody who knows Latin roots is like, what? Like,
Mike, the movie with me, and he wanted to know why those spells have fancy names, but the spell to make somebody eat slugs is eat slugs.
That's a really good question.
It's a really good question.
What does he say in the book? I think he literally just says eat slugs.
Yeah, he says eat slugs and points his wand at him.
He actually literally doesn't even say anything. He casts it non-verbally in the book. But yeah, that's really weird.
Yeah, I know. It's insane.
That is a weird moment. Love the Polyjuice scene, with the exception of the fact that they would have had Crabbe and Goyle's voices. You can hear me complain about that in two episodes ago when we talk about chapter 14.
I love the sneaky little moment of that scene of Draco picking up the gift box that doesn't belong to him, pocketing it, taking it back out, opening it, and tossing it.
Yeah.
What a little brat.
It's such a brat. Draco is such a brat. The line where he encounters Harry and Ron posing as Crabbe and Goyle when they get stopped by Percy, and he goes up to them and he sees that Goyle, Harry, is still wearing his glasses, and he goes, "Why are you wearing glasses?" And then Harry takes him out, reading. And then this line was improv. Tom Felton forgot his line and then improv the next line. He goes, "Reading." And it's so brilliant. There's actually another, while I'm on this topic, there's another improv line at the end of the movie when Lucius Malfoy comes into Dumbledore's office and he says, "Well, let us hope that Harry Potter will always be around to save the day." And Dan Radcliffe looks him in the eye and goes, "Don't worry, I will be." Jacob Isaacs talks about this. That was not in the script. This kid improv that. And I straight up got chills on set when he said that, because I just thought, wow, what a brilliant like line to improv. Like, this kid is great.
Yeah, it was a great improv, and he did a TikTok to that sound, which I loved.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Cute. Oh, Tom did?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I really like
the moment before they find out that Ginny has been taken down into the Chamber of Secrets. We hear this like loudspeaker, and McGonagall's voice comes over it and goes, "All students back to your dormitories immediately." And Austin was like, "They have a PA system at Hogwarts?"
Yeah, they do, apparently.
Like, literally, we don't know. According to the books, they have a bell schedule. Like,
exactly.
Real bells or digital bells that come over a PA system. Like, what?
They, like, don't have electricity. Give us the... Do they have electricity? They don't have electricity.
You always see firelight.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, you have an intercom, but you don't have a... Unless it's a spell. You know how, like, Dumbledore holds the wand up to his neck?
Yeah, It could be sonorous. Is there anything you want to say? I keep talking about scenes, and I feel like I'm, like, trampling the things you want to say.
No, this is the most chaotic episode ever, and I love the energy here.
I love the chaotic energy of this episode. When we were debating, like, why hasn't anybody found the Chamber of Secrets? Like, these two 12-year-olds just happened to find it. I had this epiphany, and it seems dumb to me now that I only just realized this watching the films. Anybody could have found... Well, first of all, we hear that nobody really goes into that girl's bathroom because of Myrtle. Because
Myrtle's annoying.
And then anybody could have found that little snake etched into the side of the sink. But the only way you can open the entrance is with Parseltongue.
Okay, but like...
Nobody else has spoken Parseltongue.
It is sort of embarrassing because Ron can emulate Parseltongue so easily because he's just heard Harry speaking in his sleep.
Yeah,
but you're telling me that nobody
accidentally held on to a th for too long in their word and just sinks. Okay,
like, you literally just have to go in there and
person
speak.
And then it was like,
you have to go in there and speak literal gibberish and it will open.
Yeah. But
you're telling me that Dumbledore could not figure out to go in there and be like, "Hey, Myrtle, how did you die?"
Well, I mean, even Myrtle doesn't know. She's like, I just saw some eyes. But you'd think they would figure that out.
But, like, Dumbledore can ask her and be like, eyes, dead, the roosters are dying.
Somebody spoke a funny language. It was a boy.
Oh, a
yeah, basilisk. The process of elimination. Yeah, it's really, there's a lot of things in this one that just died don't make.
Like, I said it before, but, like, where are the adults? Where are they? They are missing.
Yep.
So once the chambers opened, presumably, like, everything has to get around Hogwarts really quick, right? Like, how it was opened and how it all went down. It has to get around school.
Probably. We have questions. There's a lot of logistical questions that Chamber of Secrets leaves me with. The chamber scene is not as scary as it is in the book. It's still pretty freaky, but it's not as freaky as the dialogue that we get in the book.
I wish they had kept the book dialogue.
I wish they'd put more of it, just like the, especially like more of Harry, I get it, it's disturbing.
More of it's Harry disturbing. Telling him off.
Yeah. Oh my God, sassy Harry from the books. I just wish that was, there was more sassy Harry across the board.
They could have done it so well too, you know?
Oh yeah, no, and he does at moments. I just wanted more of it.
Yeah, the chamber scene was good. It was better in the book overall.
Yeah, there. I will say there is no like epic showdown where Harry's like standing on the head of the statue, though. That does not happen in the book, and that's pretty. That's a pretty cool, effective thing in the film. Like,
it is more cinematic. Yeah, his conversation with Dumbledore.
Yep.
Classic.
Yeah, so good.
And sad because it's the last time we're gonna see Richard Harris as Dumbledore.
So super sad. Super sad. Richard Harris made a phenomenal Dumbledore. Yeah.
So who won the movie for you?
I knew you were going to ask that, and I came prepared this time.
Okay.
For me, this might be a weird answer. Rupert Grint fully won the movie. His acting in this is pretty spectacular. First with the slugs, then just with the spiders and like everything with Lockhart, his expressions. He did so well in this movie. I feel like we start to lose a little bit of Ron's character over the course of the movie series. And this one just had a lot of Ron in it. And it reminds me like why I love Ron so much, because of how his book character is. It's refreshing to see, because the movie was so close to the book, like we really get some good Ron content in this one. And I thought Rupert Grint did a fabulous job. Who won the movie for you?
I'm going to say Arthur Weasley won the movie for me.
Really?
Yeah, because in the end, Lucius goes down. Arthur is triumphant against his enemy.
I mean, we don't see that in the movie.
But it's implied.
Okay.
And Arthur is just fabulous. He's just the best character.
He is. He is. I'm not going to fight you on that. We love Arthur. The moment at the breakfast table, she's like, your sons flew the car to Surrey and back. Did you really? How did it go? And she like hits him and he goes, that was very wrong indeed, boys. Very wrong.
I think it's Arthur for me. I think he just, I guess we don't see him a lot, but the times in which we see Arthur, I find impactful. And I actually feel that way about Arthur as a whole throughout all of the movies. He's easily in my top five movies characters.
Yeah.
And we don't spend a ton of time with him, but the time we do spend with him is always quality.
Totally. I'd like to say my secondary answer for who won the movie for me is definitely Jason Isaacs as Lucius.
You wouldn't say he lost the movie?
Yeah, he lost Dobby, but he won the movie. He's so good. Jason Isaacs makes me love Lucius, not love, but love to hate Lucius. Oh, he's such a good villain.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah.
Who lost the movie for you?
The fact that there wasn't more Quidditch content.
Gross.
Who lost the movie for me?
For me, it's an easy answer.
Oh, I think I know who you're going to say.
It's my dude, Hagrid.
What?
It's not his fault. It's not his fault that he lost the movie, but the dude goes to Azkaban for no reason. And he didn't win during the movie.
He didn't win in the story by any means. No. His round of applause at the end of the film is really very sweet. When he's talking to the kids and he's like,
I love when, is it Crab goes to applaud and Draco hits
him. And Draco drags him down. This is not one I return to often. I've said this before. The first two films are not ones that I like rewatch often. Prisoner of Azkaban is my most frequent rewatch. These first two films are very comforting.
Yeah. I don't know if I would use the word comforting to describe this movie.
I don't know, nostalgic for me. It's like my childhood.
Nostalgic, yes. Especially this one, because I do remember seeing it in theaters. I remember growing with it. Yeah, I would agree with that.
Like, these are movies I would curl up in bed with a quilt and a hot cocoa.
It was good. It was very good.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to making you and Austin watch them all with us when you get here.
Oh, yeah, fully.
With some butterbeer and a good buffet of snacks.
I'm going to bring the unofficial Harry Potter cookbook. I'm going to visit McKenna in 3 weeks, and we're still in a pandemic. We're literally just going to stay in her house and do Harry Potter crap for 2 weeks. We're really excited. The Daily Profcast reunion 2020.
I know. It's magic.
It's going to be